Route 616, your home for all things Marvel main continuity. Hello, buddy. Welcome back to the podcast. We are back. This is
some of
our,
us, anyway.
Well, Dan bailed
some
on
us,
but that's
being,
okay.
And ancient creatures sailed back out into the sea after rampaging through Tokyo.
Yeah, that kind of ruined the whole nerd talk that you guys were going to have about the Godzilla movie today, but
that's all right. Most of it was probably going to be an offline talk because I don't want to spoil a movie that's still in theaters.
Fair enough.
Other than to say, it's definitely worth watching. It's probably the best movie I've seen this year.
Yeah, Bill just saw it the other day and enjoyed it as much as Dan did and said. So, yeah. I have not seen it because I have never seen a Godzilla movie, so.
This is the one to watch. Like, that's not hyperbole. If you're going to watch one Godzilla movie, this is the one to watch.
It's pretty impressive that you guys had the same
feel. Even if you're not into, like, Godzilla movies, it's worth watching because it's not really about Godzilla. Like, Godzilla's there, but the story's about a lot more than Godzilla, which is what makes it stand out.
Nice. Well, this is episode 70, and also the last episode of the podcast of 2023, as we will be going into the new year Monday.
New year, less Doctor Strange for a bit.
Yes.
Although, less time without Doctor Strange than you'd think, because we've just basically caught up to where a lot of the other comics were.
That's true as well. We'll be doing our end of the month stuff at the end of this podcast, so stay tuned for that if you enjoy those segments. And yeah,
I'm not insane enough to try to organize an entire year of comics, so we're not doing end of year stuff.
Oh, hell no.
I am not going through, what is it, 70 episodes we're on of back comics that we all recorded this year because we started in like June?
No, well, we started, we started in 2022.
Yeah, I guess so. We have more than a year's worth, but still, I'm not going back to a year's worth of comics.
Oh, no. That'd be foolish. But yeah, so we decided to take a break off last week, and we're back. So
pre-Christmas schedules just did not allow for a recording.
Yeah, we weren't gonna have Dan, and I just wasn't feeling it right before Christmas, so we just decided to come back for New Year's weekend. So here we are. Anyways, today we are going to finally finish that Doctor Strange stretch off. Some of you might be excited by that thought. With the first three comics we covered today, and then for the second three comics, we're going to get into a nice little Iron Man arc to end this off.
Spoilers, I've read Iron Man up until 1978. This is my favorite Iron Man arc.
That's a pretty big indictment.
Yes, Iron Man is not a great title. This spell is really good. It's not a great title overall.
Yeah, Iron Man tends to be a butt of a lot of longtime comic fan jokes.
And having read so much of it now, I understand, because I never really read Iron Man before. And so my first exposure beyond guest appearances was Iron Man 1, the movie. And that made him awesome. And then the comics improved because he was good in the movie.
Yeah, well,
And they started writing him.
Yeah.
As Robert Downey Jr. And so the comics got good. But reading pre-Iron Man 1 comics, yeah, I get why everyone made fun of him. And his nose. That will make sense in like 10 years at the pace you're reading, Ryan.
Yeah. I'm in the Inhumans arc of Fantastic Four. I have a ways to go. Anyways, let us get started here.
Inhumans never worked for me. They get good ratings from me because objectively they're pretty good comics. But I don't think I've enjoyed a single Inhumans story.
Inhumans is like the perfect, they're like the antithesis of, well, not antithesis, that's the wrong word, I think. They're the perfect, my words are struggling today. They're the perfect showcase, I'll just say, of the phrase, great idea, poor execution.
Oh, absolutely. Although even objectively, a lot of the like Fantastic Four stuff with the Inhumans specifically is good execution too.
Oh yeah. It's I just meant the general Inhumans.
Yeah. It's objectively good. I just don't like it. And I can't even put my finger on why I don't like it. I just don't like it.
Yeah. I think a lot of the issue with the Inhumans, oh, we're getting really off track, but oh well, is that part of the problem with them is the fact, and this goes into very modern comic talk, because they tried in recent years with them, but like the X-Men are right there, and you had now have this new group of subhuman characters. So
not subhumans; those are also different. Those are in Eternals.
True.
Okay, they're called deviants, but still.
Half human.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. That I actually like the way they used them early because they couldn't use the X-Men the same way. In modern comics, they tried to substitute the Inhumans for the X-Men, basically, because of rights
disputes. The movie rights issues.
Yeah. And it was terrible, but that's not the problem. I think the problem is the only Inhumans we get introduced to early are Medusa and Gorgon. And then all of a sudden you have like 15 Inhumans and you're supposed to care about all of them and they never get any chance for character development.
Yeah, that's one of their big problems too, is they truly never did get properly fleshed out to where people cared about them.
And then later they tried to remedy it, like they gave Triton some solo stuff and so. But I already don't give a shit because I've read like 20 Inhumans stories where he's just generic fish guy. And so when they finally start
fish boy?
Yeah, when they finally start trying to give some of them, like they gave Black Bolt some solo stuff and so. And I already don't care. I'm not gonna start caring now.
That's where you and I differ. I love Black Bolt.
Maybe I'll read some Black Bolt in the future that will change it.
There's a run that probably will change your mind. But
yeah, because I'm not closed off to the potential of starting to care. There have been characters that I've not liked and then hit a really good run and it's completely changed my opinion on them. But it wasn't really a solo run. It was still Inhumans, but it was like solo Black Bolt stuff. And he can't talk, which already hindered him. And he lost his memory immediately. So there goes any hope of character development.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too good.
No, it's really bad. Early solo Inhuman titles are terrible.
See, a lot of what works, why Black Bolt can be better now, is that the medium has moved forward so much that you can.
Yeah, it's also 70s art where they don't do anything good with the art, mostly.
Yeah. That's the problem.
Although, I realize how much it's improved going back and looking at 60s stuff. That next crop of artists advanced things a fair bit.
I imagine.
And well, I still get horribly disappointed when I hit a Sal Buscema comic in my reading, because he's still going strong and he has not improved that much.
Well, I think it's time we get into our first Doctor Strange comic of the day. We're getting on the tail end of the Steve Ditko run with Stan Lee here. Roy Thomas has entered the picture to try and mend things too a little bit now.
Yeah, they have Roy, I think, writing these just because Steve will actually talk to him.
Yeah. So we have Strange Tales issue 144 B story, where a man half never trod. This one is titled Roy Thomas, Steve Ditko. Stan's just editing at this point because, like Bill just said, they're not talking. Steve doing all the art, of course. Jack Kirby make us proceed to the cover because it's a Nick Fury cover, mostly.
Yeah, they drew Strange in there, but that's not a Ditko Strange. That's a Kirby Strange.
Alrighty, Simic did the letters here. February 1966 release date, a 10-page story, and I will take this one. Let's go. While the Ancient One continues to search for the dimension which Clea had been banished, Dormammu is visited by his minion Asti, who informs its master of the Ancient One's progress. Dormammu and Asti organize a trick that would have Strange travel into the kingdom of Tazza on a false lead that Clea may be there. Instead, after battling many creatures that live in the realm, Strange finds himself confronted by Tazza, the realm's ruler. Tazza stands before the inert bodies of heroes who have come to his realm and whose astral forms he holds prisoner. I had to double check this was the right one.
It is.
Astral forms he holds prisoner. Strange at first disorientates his foe by using his own astral form to possess the inert bodies of Tazza's fallen foes. However, Tazza learns this trick and the two lock in mystic combat. However, Doctor Strange manages to best Tazza and demands he tell him of Clea's location. However, Tazza claims to know no female, and Strange realizes he was tricked and that Tazza was tricked into attacking Strange. Strange then agrees to release Tazza from his mystic bonds if he frees all his prisoners. After the battle, Strange returns home to rest. Ta-da.
This was fine.
Yeah, the thing is, even the weaker parts of this Doctor Strange story tend to get a pass for me, because...
I was a little disappointed when I first read it, because I was thinking of it as part of the big arc. But it's not really part of the arc. It's like a standalone issue. Because Dormammu is really just a framing device to set up the villain of the issue.
Yeah, this is another weird deviation.
I don't think we're deviating anymore. I think the arc ended when Strange defeated Dormammu. And now we're into single issues that just get lumped into the arc on our site because it doesn't provide any time for Doctor Strange to... There's no gaps between them. But it's not really part of the Dormammu story. It's just the villain of the week.
Yeah, I think they probably want to do more Villain of the Week single solo story stuff, but then we end up wrapping everything up fast, and then we kind of go back to kind of making this one whole...
Yeah, and that was just Ditko leaving, I think, that led to that rushed wrap-up. But, I think they just wanted to keep Clea in mind, because they always intended to eventually Strange was going to rescue her.
Yeah, they were probably going to drag that out for a while.
Yeah, but I don't think this and the next one, or the previous story, because we had one last week that was not part of the arc really either. After he defeated Dormammu, he was just doing something. I don't remember what it was, but I think it was just him going back to Earth and meeting with the Ancient One and stuff.
Yeah.
But, really part of the arc. They're just a transition period that gets lumped in because there's no time for him to be anywhere else in between these issues. And the site organizes by chronology rather than arcs specifically. So it gets lumped in here because he can't turn up randomly in a Spider-Man or something. He literally left the Ancient One that he was meeting last issue and immediately is on this mission.
They probably wanted to get to go back to more action in their story for the month.
I suspect if Steve and Stan hadn't fallen out so hard, it probably would have been 6 months to a year before Clea was rescued.
Probably could have been a fun time. But
yeah, I think it actually could have been a really interesting, kind of like the Namor quest for the Trident thing, I think they probably would have done. But instead we got a couple of Villain of the Week issues, and then a really rushed conclusion to everything that Steve left on Stan's desk when he left. Not joking, I'm pretty sure that's actually how it went down.
Probably.
It's been a few years since I read the story of it, but I think that he literally left the final issues on Stan's desk when he quit.
Oh, I wouldn't blame him. So yeah, I give that one a 3.
I gave it a 3 too. It's only disappointing when you think of it as part of a bigger arc. As a standalone story, it's fine.
Yeah. Moving right forward with Strange Tales 145 B-Story. This one's titled To Catch a Magician. We've got Dennis O'Neill writing this one, apparently. I didn't realize that. Steve Ditko's still on art.
They're still looking for people that Steve will talk to.
Apparently.
And this is one of Dennis's only titles in the main order for a while. He does some Strange, some Shield. He just kind of fills in, but he's mostly a romance writer. And a Conan writer. He does a lot of Conan. Or actually, no. He edits a lot of Conan. He doesn't write. But yeah, he's mostly a romance writer.
Interesting. Well,
in Star Comics, Westerns, he's in everything.
Okay. He's dipped the sand and everything.
I'm looking at his credits because he's not like one of the known writers there, so I took a deep dive into his credits.
Jack Kirby and Mike Esposito did this cover, as it's never Nick Fury cover. Strange not even on this one at all. Artie Simic's on letters.
And I feel like Strange not being on the next on this cover. Actually, never mind. This is because we switched to the focus covers. Next issue is a dedicated Strange cover.
Letters by Artie Simic here. March 1966 release date, 10-page story, and I will take this one as well. A new criminal named Mr. Rasputin, a descendant of Grigory Rasputin, has appeared on the criminal scene, using his mystical powers for his own personal gains. One night, Doctor Strange detects an evil menace, and thinking it's his old foe Baron Mordo, God forbid, tracks it to the home of Mr. Rasputin. The two mystics then battle. However, Strange is still weak from his battle against Hazard, and when Rasputin has him on the defensive, Rasputin then pulls out a gun and shoots Doctor Strange, quite simply. Escaping and seeking treatment in the hospital, Doctor Strange sends out his astral form to attack Rasputin, unaware that Rasputin has hired a gunman to kill Doctor Strange in the hospital. Battling Rasputin, the villain tries to banish Doctor Strange to another dimension. However, using his mental control over the cloak of levitation in the Eye of Agamotto, Doctor Strange is able to knock his foe unconscious and bring him back to the hospital. There, Strange arrives just in time to stop the gunmen as well. He then hypnotizes them into confessing their crimes and erases Rasputin's mystic knowledge. Ta-da.
So this was objectively a weaker story, but I kind of like it for one simple reason. It's the only time I can think of that someone actually shoots a magic hero.
I will say I kind of... In my head, I remember this being two, but I think that's part of this one's problem for me is that it's so rushed and crammed into one story. But
I remembered it being better because I think the first time I just loved the audacity of, yeah, I'm a shitty magician. But I've got a gun. What are you going to do about that, asshole?
That is pretty funny. I do.
The
like
only way it would be better is if he was an elf.
I do like the concept of this being a more grounded Doctor Strange. And I still did give this a 3, but I do think this is one of the weak points of this big stretch that we've...
Yeah, I gave it a 3 as well. It's objectively probably the weakest issue of this run, but I really like it.
Yeah. Fair enough.
And so, for the record, the elf gun comment relates to Swamp Thing from like 10 years. it's Howard the Duck level zaniness that never got properly explained because the writer got fired before they came to a good conclusion. So they rushed something out, but no one knows where it was originally going because Steve Gerber was gone and didn't tell anyone.
Yeah, and who can get in that mind?
No one should. Half the time Gerber was brilliant and half the time he was like terrible because he was trying something so wacky that just didn't land.
He should have written Impossible Man.
He would have been good at Impossible Man, honestly. It probably wouldn't have sucked.
So, we're at the last Doctor Strange with Steve Ditko on board as we enter Strange Tales 146 B-Story. This one's titled The End, at last.
Stan, I feel like that was Stan taking a shot.
Yeah. quite possibly. Dennis O'Neill writing this one. Steve Ditko on art. Steve Ditko on the cover, because it's a beautiful Doctor Strange cover. Artie Simico on letters. April 1966 release date. 10-page story. And let us enter the end at last. Furious of dealing with constant defeat against Doctor Strange, Dormammu begins his most ambitious plot yet, defeating Eternity. Traveling to Eternity's realm, he traps the entity in a mystic barrier before it can awaken. Doctor Strange is then transported from Earth to Eternity's realm to witness Dormammu's moment of triumph. However, Doctor Strange manages to free Eternity. When Dormammu attempts to fight Eternity, he flees into Eternity's very being and is seemingly destroyed by two planets inside the embodiment of existence crashing together. The resultant chain reaction also apparently destroys Eternity as well, putting Strange in peril as all the mass stars and planets within the cosmic being to... Within the cosmic being... begin to erupt and explode all over the realm. Traveling to the dark dimension, Strange is met there by the Ancient One, who informs him that with Dormammu gone, Strange has the power to reverse any of Dormammu's spells. Strange then uses his powers to free those banished by Dormammu, including Clea and even Baron Mordo. How nice of him. And that's that.
I think the reason he freed Mordo too was because it wasn't an either or. He either reverses the banishment spell or he doesn't.
Yeah, no, he had to.
Yeah. And they kind of fuck it up. Because when he frees Mordo and Clea, they end up on Earth. They were banished from the Dark Dimension. They should return to the Dark Dimension where they were banished from.
Yeah.
But instead they end up on Earth, but, that's because they didn't want to saddle Bill Everett with trying to explain how everyone got back to Earth.
Fair enough. This might be a little wild of me, but I actually really enjoyed this, and I think this is about as good as you can do a wrap-up in one issue, and I actually gave this a 4.
But I gave it a 3 because, objectively, it's a bad Rush story. But looking at the circumstances they were under, the fact that they managed to produce any sort of a conclusion with the original team and basically set up a clean slate for the new team taking over was impressive. And so I gave it 3 just for somewhat nailing the landing.
I will say part of my 4 as well is that I highly enjoyed the Steve Ditko art in this one.
Oh, the art was fantastic. The art was kind of a fuck you to Stan. Like, this is what you're letting go.
This was some of Steve Ditko's, ironically, some of Steve Ditko's best work. But also, he obviously put his heart into this one, knowing that it was the last one.
Yeah, and he probably figured that DC wasn't going to let him do a Doctor Strange. Because, like, when he left, he figured he was going to DC. I think he did actually go to DC, but...
I don't remember.
I don't remember either, but I think he figured he was going to DC when he left.
I don't even... he probably did at least think that. As a note, we've been talking about how this was his last one, of course, but the Doctor Strange story in this issue, along with Amazing Spider-Man 38, which is published at the same time, marks the end of Steve Ditko's initial tenure at Marvel Comics, which is possibly why so many subplots are resolved. It's definitely why. The apparent demise of Dormammu, of course, the end of Eternity, rescue of Clea and Baron Mordo.
Yeah, also, it's just a hard reset for the next team, which ends up being Bill Everett. So, good thing they gave him a reset, because at this point, Everett's not exactly going to be the person to be wrapping up other people's stories.
Yeah. Also, the final panel, which shows Strange almost exiting off the page, could be interpreted as a reflection of Ditko's own departure, although never confirmed by Ditko himself. It has long been rumored that he and Stan Lee had many creative differences, especially with Spider-Man, that led to his leaving. He would eventually return in 1979.
Yeah, because he didn't have to deal with Stan.
Fair enough.
That's really what it was. By that point, Stan was largely out of power. And, so Steve came back. I haven't read any of his return yet.
No, you haven't gotten there. I don't even know what he did when he came back.
I'm sort of there. I've read Into 80 with Bits and Pieces. Because with the much larger library, you're far less focused around a single date than we are with 8 titles.
Well, I got curious and I'm kind of looking at what he does when he comes back. Oh, perfect. Some Machine Man.
Oh, that's why I haven't even started Machine Man yet. But I remember it being terrible. Because I've seen the ratings.
Oh, wow. He comes back and does a random Doctor Strange, too. Before it becomes its own title.
He must have had to fill in for someone, because that would hurt.
He does some Machine Man. He does a lot of Machine Man. That was.
I think Machine Man was his thing.
Not a lot. I mean, he jumps into the issue 10. He does a decent amount of it, though. He does a little bit of Micronauts. He does some Daredevil. He does some Hulk, a little bit. Some more Micronauts, some Marvel Spotlight stuff. A Fantastic Four annual, interestingly enough. That's strange. Then we get he does an Avengers annual. Kind of weird again. Speedball. That must have been his, because he's on it from the start. He does all his Speedball, so that was his. And we will get on to that good old Iron Man story that's next, which is issue 69 of Tales of Suspense, the A story. If I Must Die, Let It Be With Honor. This one's written by Stan Lee, Don Hex on art, Vincent Clitaz on inks. Jack Kirby did the cover, Sam Rosen's on letters. June 1965 release date, 12-page story, and Bill will take us away.
All right. While working on a sub-miniature reverser in his lab, Tony Stark has to stop his work in order to recharge his pacemaker. Soon after, he pulls aside his work in order to attend to business. He overhears Pepper and Happy discussing a new club they'd like to go to, and he offers them the use of his personal limo for their date. Pepper asks Tony if he'd like to tag along, much to the dismay of Happy, but Tony naturally declines the invitation. Meanwhile, in Siberia, Communist Commissar Comrade Bolsky, I don't think Comrade needed to be there, has suggested a team of enslaved scientists to use the laboratory of the original Crimson Dynamo in order to build a suit of armor which Bolsky would use to defeat Iron Man and score a propaganda victory for his leaders. The captured scientists build Bolsky a suit of titanium armor, which he dons and, calling himself Titanium Man, issues a challenge to Iron Man. When word reaches Washington, D.C., Senator Byrd asks Stark to have Iron Man meet the challenge, and so they set up a meeting place in the neutral territory of Alberia and set to combat in a far-off, desolate area which was once a battlefield during World War II. The battle in question would be televised all over the world. Preparing his armor in order to withstand the coming battle, Iron Man meets Titanium Man in the battle zone, and the first round of their fight begins as the whole entire world watches. During the combat, Iron Man soon stumbles on the fact that Titanium Man has booby-trapped the field with landmines. Because if you're gonna cheat, you might as well cheat on national television, or international television, when everyone can see it. And we have lost Ryan while I was reading that. So I'll just start talking about what I thought of it while we wait for them to come back. This was a really fun story. Titanium Man, even though he seems kind of generic, is a really cool villain, because it's always cool to see heroes have to fight a version of themselves that's just more powerful. And Titanium Man is just bigger, stronger. He's not presented as faster, but generally superior to Iron Man in most ways. And then on top of that, he's cheated and rigged the battlefield. So it should be interesting to see where this goes. a note the person who wrote the synopsis ignored was the presence of Countess Stephanie de la Sperosa, who is a jilted ex of Tony's and has intentions of making sure that this time Tony doesn't forget her by stealing some of his shit, which will be revealed in future issues what she actually swiped of his, and it's kind of important that he has it. It was like a weapon system for Iron Man, and I think it was shown in this one. Don't remember exactly where the break was. And Ryan better hurry up and get back, because I'm running out of stuff to stall on. I'm trying to hurry him up. Another thing that wasn't mentioned in the summary but will become important: when Iron Man goes to Alberia to fight Titanium Man, he brings Pepper and Happy with him to hang out in the audience.
Hi, I assume you're done?
Oh yeah, I've been stalling for like 2 minutes, 3 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, no, a little early return there. Anyways, that was a good setup issue.
I thought a really good setup. Still only got a 3 from me because I didn't realize how good this was going to become.
Yeah, I gave this one a 3 too. This is like, well, yeah, it's really a good setup issue, but the meat of this is in the next one.
Yeah. And I've been over a lot of the minor details of this. Like, I talked about the Countess. I talked about Pepper and Happy coming along with him. Just, like, anything to fill time.
Yeah. I rushed as fast as I could. Let's move on to the next one, I suppose, because we gave our ratings. Issue 70 of Tales of Suspense, the A Story. This one's titled Fight On, For a World is Watching. Stan Lee writing, Don Heck on art, Mike Esposito on inks, Jack Kirby, Joe Sano on the cover, Sam Rosen on the letters, July 1965 release date, 12-page story, and Bill will take this one away.
Alright. Accepting a challenge from the Titanium Man in combat to prove which nation's armored champion is superior, Iron Man soon finds that the Titanium Man is not playing a fair game, having rigged the battlefield with landmines. As the two titans clash, Titanium Man unleashes his vicious power against Iron Man. The world watches the entire event live on television. As Happy Hogan and Pepper Potts watch the fight, Countess Stephanie de la Sperosa is searching for Tony Stark to watch the fight with, not knowing that Stark is really Iron Man. She breaks into Stark's hotel room and finds the experimental new transistor he is working on in order to entice Stark to look for her. Okay, I mentioned that last issue when I was stalling. But apparently that happened here. Like I said, it's tough to remember what was in which issue.
Yeah, they kind of blend together.
Yeah. While back in the battlefield, Iron Man manages to fight off Titanium Man's attacks, but is slowly sustaining damage and is being overpowered. However, Iron Man manages to make it to the end of the round when a brief intermission is called. Returning to his room in order to get the new transistor, in order to be a match to the for Titanium Man, I had to kind of figure out how this was going, because the sentence actually says here, to get the new transistor in order to be a match the Titanium Man. Iron Man finds it missing and comes across the Countess's handkerchief. He then sends Happy Hogan to find her and bring the device to him. Making quick repairs, Iron Man returns for round 2 of their battle. As the battle rages on, Happy manages to find the Countess and convince her to give him the device. Arriving on the battlefield, Happy attempts to bring it to Iron Man, but finds himself struck down by a deflected blast from the Titanium Man's weapons, critically injuring him. Just before Happy apparently dies, he reveals that he knows Iron Man is his boss, Tony Stark. Inserting the device into his armor, an enraged Iron Man then turns to battle the Titanium Man once again. And that's where this one leaves off. This one's real good. The fact that they had the audacity to actually apparently kill Happy. Because I think that he was originally supposed to die here, and then they got cold feet and kind of backed off.
Yeah, they lead us to believe that he's essentially dead, but...
And the way they lead us to believe, it doesn't read like, aha, you're supposed to think he's dead, but he's really not. It reads like he died.
Yeah. Like, there's a throwaway line, I don't know if it's in this one or if it's the next one, that he's, like, in critical condition or whatever, but, like, they don't really... They only really focus on it when Tony's having his inner monologue moment later on.
Yeah, I think that was next issue. I believe here he was dead, and then they got cold feet and decided to turn it to critical injuries, and then eventually they bring him back through methodology that sucks.
This one was really good, though.
Yeah, I say this spell is the best spell Iron Man has been, and that includes the section where they bring Happy back. But that section's not good. It's one of the worst villains in all of Marvel. And they use it a fair bit.
This one was good enough that it got my second four of the day.
This one got a four from me as well.
Nice.
I really liked it, but it doesn't quite hit five-star territory.
Oh, definitely not. But it's a really good comic for the time. Titanium Man ended up being an alright film.
Yeah. I was saying while you were away that I actually like the villain that's like the hero but more powerful and forces the hero to get creative.
I like it when it's not overused.
Oh yeah, you can't do every issue on it, but it's a good archetype and they do it well here.
I understand why the MCU, they did that a lot early on, because it can be... The problem with it is that they were doing it for everybody.
Yeah. But I think, like, every hero needs the hero that's exactly like them, but more powerful.
Yeah, they need their antithesis.
The complete opposite. Like, with Iron Man, it's the Mandarin and Titanium Man.
I know, pretty good. Solid stuff, so let's get into our last comic here, which is Tales of Suspense number 71, A Story. What Price Victory, this one's titled.
Stanley, even that title is still based around the idea that Happy should be dead.
Oh yeah. Wallace Wood is on inks here. Jack Kirby, Wally Wood on cover, and Artie Simic on letters. August 1965, release date 12-page story, and Bill will take this one away.
All right. Happy Hogan has been critically injured, bringing a new component for Iron Man's armor to the battlefield where the Golden Avenger is battling the Titanium Man. Iron Man quickly uses his boosted strength and abilities to fight the Titanium Man head-on. Iron Man manages to overpower the Titanium Man and easily wins the match between the two, returning to the nearby crowd as the victor. They say easily, but this is like 7 pages into the comic at this point. Learning that Happy is still alive and was taken to a nearby hospital, Iron Man returns to his hotel room to recharge himself and change back into Tony Stark. Arriving at the hospital, Tony comforts Pepper, which angers the Countess, who storms off vowing to get back at Stark. Meanwhile, Tony has to push back feelings for Pepper, leaving both thinking they can never express their feelings for one another. And that's it. Like, this issue is mostly fight still. I think saying 7 pages might have been an underestimate. It's more like 9 or 10 of the 12.
Yeah, it's definitely a majority. Still a solid story. But the weakest one of this three stretch, I would say.
The first part was the weakest. This sets
you're probably
lot,
right about that.
This sets a lot of stuff up for the future with Happy knowing Tony's Iron Man and still being alive. Pepper having more conflicted feelings now that Happy got injured because of Iron Man and she still feels something for Tony. And then they're setting up the Countess is going to try to do something because she's jealous of Tony. So there's a lot of stuff they set in motion here. Unfortunately, they don't follow through on a lot of it, but that's not the fault of this comic.
And Tony's own emotional stuff. So yeah, pretty solid. Not as quite as good as the last one, but not...
This was a comfortable 3 as well.
Yeah, this was, definitely. So, on that note, let us get right into our end of the month stuff. My poll is saying we had to come.
Before we jump to the end of the month, what are we doing next month? Or next week?
I guess it technically is next month, but
next year, if we want to be real pedantic.
True. Next week we will be covering Avengers 19 and 20. Then we will get a little.
My boy.
Yes. I love that guy too. Sergeant Fury, a little break for Sergeant Fury with issue 22. And then we go into Tales of Suspense 72A story for a little more Iron Man. Then we get Avengers 21 and 22. So it's a very Avengers heavy week.
I'm sorry for that.
The next couple are, really.
Yeah, Avengers has been neglected as the other stuff's been jumping forward.
What a shame.
It is, because now we have to get it in the clump.
Most of this is actually like the best stretch Avengers has had, so I wasn't too upset at the end of the day about it.
Yeah, they were never as bad as I thought they were going to be, but I still didn't have fun reading them the first time, and I'm not looking forward to revisiting them.
You and I
except
felt
for the Swordsman ones, because I liked Swordsman.
So that's that. And then the end of the month stuff.
Yeah,
the poll list I already gave away. Yeah. I'm sure yours is the same,
I'm not
too,
changing so. Anything with my poll list either. It was basically all good Iron Man. Or all good Doctor Strange. And even the mediocre Fury was in the same issue as the good Doctor Strange's, so.
Well, then let's
and
go for our...
For our end of month, best and worst, we had four Strange Tales with Nick Fury, where he dealt with the with Mantello and the Fixer, and then the Druid. The whole giant Doctor Strange run, and then the Iron Man stuff. So that was easy to summarize. So, worst comic of the month.
Oh.
Do you have one yet, or do you want me to go first?
No, I'll just give. I'm gonna go with my instincts on this one and give it to that. The one we covered today, the Strange Tales 145 B story where he gets shot. Well, I didn't give anything a 2 this month, so that's why it made it hard.
Yeah,
I gave everything at least a 3. So there was a few points in this Doctor Strange stretch that were weaker, and I could have gone with. I went with this one because I think there was more potential in this one.
Yeah,
that wasn't tapped into.
I went with Strange Tales 143A story, where Nick Fury gets the metal mask shoved over his head with a bomb in it, and then he's strapped to the bomb. And then he's freed by Deus Ex Machina that was allegedly established earlier in the story, but it was not, because they wanted to surprise the reader with it at the end.
Oh, I lied. I did have... You know, I completely, like, I knew the Furies were in this stretch, but I kept ignoring it, but, yeah, whatever. I could have given it to one of the Furies, but I don't care. That's strange. Can have it.
Fair enough.
I'm just laughing to myself now, because 3 out of 4 of the Furies had 2-star ratings, so I should
have
given it to one of those.
Yeah, this was a rough spell of Fury. And then we hit our best of the month.
My best... I know you're gonna give it to the Iron Man, so I kind of want to give it to one of the Strangers.
Yeah, since you let the cat out of the bag, I'll say what mine is. It's Tales of Suspense number 70A story, where Happy dies. Not because I have anything against Happy, but killing a main character is a rare step. And yeah, to get cold feet and walk back on it, but at this point, he was dead. They killed a main character in this comic, and then they changed their mind later and retconned it.
I'm going to go with... There's problems with this issue, but the lead-up to it kind of had a bit of an epic feel, and the moment itself kind of felt big, even though it was a little bit of a letdown in a way. I'm going to go with the issue where Strange finally meets Eternity, which is Strange Show's 138B story. Because, well, I mean, I gave it a 4. I did really enjoy it, but there is some obvious issue with it if you think about it. But
I can't fault that choice. I mean,
I think
that was a
strong.
Good issue.
I mean, the happy one, I could have, that was the easy option because that was really great. But I also didn't want to overlook how strong this Doctor Strange arc was, so that's why I spread mine out to one of those.
It's fair. I was originally going to give them both to Strange, and then...
Remembered Fury existed.
I remembered Fury existed, and I did want to honor the Iron Man arc just because it's my favorite time of Iron Man so far.
Well, the Iron Man,
I've been enjoying Iron Man throughout, but it's pretty bad in the 70s. I've got to admit, I like it, but it's not good stuff. He's like fighting villains at a convention and all the nerds are making fun of him and stuff.
Yeah.
That was the writers trying to send the message to Stan about the nose.
Yeah, so
they literally just had nerds ripping him for having a nose on his armor for the entire time.
That's great.
And how it was bad cosplay because Iron Man wouldn't do something that stupid.
So yeah, that was our picks. I think we had some solid picks this month.
It was a tough one because there was no standout terrible stories and no standout excellent stories.
At least you gave the spotlight to Nick Fury since I forgot about him.
Yeah. I almost did until I was doing up the list. I was originally going to give it to the Doctor Strange where he goes to the other dimension, the guys turning people into masks.
Yeah, I considered that one too.
But then I remembered the Nick Furies, and I'm like, no, the Nick Furies were way worse than anything in Doctor Strange.
Yeah. So yeah, solid stuff. Happy New Year to everybody out there. And if you're...
Yes, Happy New Year. Happy holidays for the ones that went past.
Yes, since we didn't really say that before. And we hope you join us in 2024 for more fun episodes. 2024 should hopefully be a good and exciting year.
Do not just be fooled podcast, by the fact that we're covering Avengers next week. There is good stuff in 2024.
Yes. And if you're watching this, of course, please would like to subscribe, comment, even share if you like to. We're available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're on listen to this on Spotify, click that poll and just let us know why you love magicians that use guns.
We almost can't use Mr. Rasputin for the shitty villain joke claiming he's good thing because even the comic was prefaced on him being shitty.
Yeah, but what else am I supposed to use?
Dan?
Leave a comment on this episode if you want to see Dan back next year.
Oh, this could blow up in our face real bad.
Anyways, everybody, we will see you on the next episode, hopefully.
Have a good year, everyone.
Have a good year. Happy New Year. See you in 2024.